And so I think if I didn't play a little, within reason, I think it's like it dishonors what they were trying to do, which was to give me a childhood that my dad never had a chance to have. So I think the play is extremely vulnerable and extremely meaningful.
Sophia, when was the last time you played?
Played consciously. So I'm home with my family right now, and I'm practicing basketball with Ivana. So we played basketball together.
Oh, that's so fun. Yes. I love that. I've never seen you play basketball. I would love to play basketball
because I never play basketball.
How often do you think you play? Because right now you're at home, so it's a kind of like a special occasion. Yes. How often do you play?
Otherwise, very rarely. I think it's like so hard to get into that mindset, like breaking away from the mindset of productivity and like entering a space of focusing on play. So very, very infrequently. I'm very excited to talk about rediscovering the art of play. That's something that I have a ton to learn about. So welcome everyone to Bamboo and Glass, a space where two Asian American women share the underrepresented perspectives that shape our lifelong journey of learning and unlearning. I'm Sophia.
And I'm Tan. I'm really excited for this conversation too, because our guest is someone who, from the moment I met him, I knew he embodied play. So last year we got to talk to Tiffany True about honoring your inner child. And this conversation is going to be a great addendum where we talk about setting that inner child free and focusing on the play and incorporating play into our lives. So today's guest is Daniel Kim, who is an actor by trade and is actually the lead actor for the short film Tar that I am producing. We actually just wrapped production like 2 weeks ago, I think, and I cannot wait to show you the finished film, Sophia.
Oh my gosh, Daniel, I have heard so many amazing things about you, so I'm so excited to get to chat. In the spirit of play, I would love to give you an opportunity to introduce yourself with this question. If you were a wrestler, what would be your entrance theme song?
Okay, first of all, I'm so excited to be on this podcast. I'm exploding with excitement. And second of all, it's hilarious because as soon as you asked me this question, like I had no doubt, instantly the song just came into my mind. It's Forever by Drake, with like Drake, Eminem, Lil Wayne, Kanye, the ba-ba-ba. It may not mean nothing.
Oh, he's using it, okay.
you know, it goes so hard. And you just come out to that and you can't help but get hyped, get a little excited, you know. And then me and my skinny body, I would go out to the wrestling match and I would immediately get destroyed. So I'm really, that would be my wrestling song.
I'm going to add that to my workout playlist. I feel like my workout playlist is getting a little stale. So you really pitched this song to me. So this is going to be my next workout song. Thank you.
A little mid-2000s flavor for
you
for
that workout. Bring it back. All right. You were so excited to share this topic of play. And when Tan introduced it to me, I was very excited as well. Can you tell us a little bit about why you are so passionate about the art of play?
Yeah, I'm an actor. And so basically my whole job is playing, just playing very seriously. But I also think that kind of a spirit of play runs deeper than just either games or the kind of the way that we think about play in strict modes in our society. I think that play really is just about taking the things that we really enjoyed when we were younger and then capturing that kind of playful, joyful spirit as we go about our adult lives. I was brainstorming with Talon on set about like, what do we want to talk about? What do we want to share? And then when this hit me, I was like, I couldn't help but like imagine the younger version of myself who just wanted to play as an adult, but just with more money and hopefully more time. And I kind of found myself thinking about, have I honored that younger version of myself and those desires that he had? And would he be like proud or happy to see me playing now? And that's kind of what I want to capture and what I'm so excited to talk about today.
Wow, we're so lucky we get to meet like the adult version of you and the kid version of you, and I guess we're all going to get to meet the kid version of each other on this episode, so that'll be very
for
fun.
Sure, when you think about your younger self and adults that you would have liked to hang out with, it's not based on their accomplishments or any career stuff or any of that. It's actually more of how fun they are to be around. And so I think there's parts of myself that I missed and have not been as present because I've been inundated with so much of like societal stories about what I should prioritize my time on and what is more important to be doing and investing into. And we don't really talk about play as an investment either. And so I think there's a lot of things that where it can be an investment, but it doesn't necessarily have to be like an expensive investment. Mm-hmm, yeah. Like it can be something that's very easily accessible because our younger selves have done it in the past too. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Totally, totally. Yeah. I actually have a quick little question that I wanted to shoot to you two.
Oh.
Because I was hearing the little episode with Tiffany that you guys did a year ago. And you guys shared some stories about how you guys used to play. But I wanted to know, like, what's kind of like a key memory or key way that you played when you were younger that maybe you still do now in some way, or maybe you don't, but you wish you did.
Hmm. I remember my dad had a camcorder, and okay. So I was like the on-camera talent. Like, I loved getting all up in the camera, like
Oscar-winning actress.
Yeah, strutting, shutting my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's not something I relate to as much anymore, but I kind of long and yearn for that in some ways. Oh. And so I think the podcast can be a new modality to kind of capture some of that on-camera talent.
Yeah.
I remember I picked up a pair of scissors and I cut my hair.
Yeah, you were talking about this.
Oh, did I talk about this? Yeah, okay, for people who didn't listen, I did pick up my scissors and I just pranced around the living room cutting up my hair, and then my mom came home to a mess. So that's still a very salient memory
that's
I think
incredible.
Of. Yeah.
You know, if you wanted to be an on-camera talent, there's this little movie called Char that we just in that you could see. You could be in it. You could be Char.
Because I was so willing to get my hair cut too.
Right.
How about you, Sophia?
Huh. Okay. On the topic of acting, our church would get together like every Saturday night, and all the kids, we were super, super bored, right? This was like before the time of iPads. So we like only had each other to entertain each other. And so I was the oldest kid in that group, and I would just order everyone around. Like, I would rally like 10 kids together to be like, we're going to make a play about this. And then we would just figure out what each person's role was, and we would put on a performance at the end of the night.
That's amazing.
So, yes.
Like a 24-hour, like, musical or a play.
Yeah, you know, it was more like a 5-minute thing, but yeah, flattered, you would think it's like a big production. No,
you know,
it's very
but
small.
But to kids, it feels like 24
sure.
hours.
Sure, some great arc is made in 5 minutes, you know?
Mm-hmm. Daniel, you had a couple of quotes that you kind of told me about when it came to play, and I found them to be really inspiring. Would you be able to share a couple of those with
us? Yeah, of
course.
I think the first one I heard... it was funnily enough, it was actually also at a church, which is a hilarious area to hear about play because that's not normally what you associate church with.
No.
But they were ended up talking about like relationships and stuff. But this quote became really salient when it came to thinking about play for me. There's nothing that kills beauty and wonder more than cynicism. There's nothing that kills beauty and wonder more than cynicism. And while she was using it for a specific context there, I kind of found it to be really relatable when it came to keeping my inner child alive. There's also another quote by Robin Williams. I didn't even think about it for this podcast, but it came up right now. You're only given a little spark of madness. Don't lose it. And I think that's also really good when it comes to thinking about the spirit of play. It's really easy for us as adults to kind of, over time, either intentionally or not, kind of murder the little child inside of ourselves, to silence those voices that used to be so like alive and present and willing to risk and be vulnerable and like find joy in mundane or absurd things. But then there's kind of a self-seriousness that and cynicism that kind of gradually filters out a lot of that stuff that used to be even so absurd or funny to us as kids. And some of that is natural. Some of that is good. But I think sometimes we go a little too far as adults and we don't recapture that. So I think, you know, for me in recent years, especially like right before and then during quarantine, was like a really transformative time for me to be able to kind of find all of that.
Yeah, I love that, because even in our podcasting journey, we at first kind of really stated that this podcast is like an Asian American podcast. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was thinking a lot more about a lot of like social justice and activism, like, you know, a lot of like difficult issues that we grapple with as a community or as individuals. And I think during the pandemic, we ended up doing an episode, I think it was like episode 118, called Asian American Podcast. And like, what are the expectations that are kind of like placed on us by being labeled that, whether that's us putting that on ourselves or by other people putting that on us. And Sophia had a really great thing that she said in that podcast, which was like, maybe a way of like expanding the possibilities of podcast of an Asian American podcast is to actually show moments of joy and play, rather than just, you know, only the topics that we believe people want to rally behind.
Oh, gotcha.
And so I feel like that you kind of see that evolution with our podcast. Like, we've had a lot more lighthearted, fun content on it compared to like, you know, the deep vulnerable, like thoughtful discussions that we used to have, which we still do. But I think there is a balance for sure to be able to encapsulate all of those in different episodes. Yeah,
totally.
We had a lot of fun with that episode about Singles Inferno. Where have you seen Singles Inferno? It's like that dating show.
Have you seen it?
No, I've never.
Okay, so Singles Inferno is a Korean reality TV show, and it brings together like 6 or 7 hot young people. They are on an island, you can tell that they're kind of like vain in some ways because they show a montage of like 5 a.m., 6 a.m., and it's them just like working.
Yeah, they're all influencers.
On the beaches. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all influencers in their own way. There was this one girl who was just really alluring and mysterious and had the most number of bachelors around her. Mm-hmm. And so we did an episode of doing like a character breakdown of her. Like, here are all the ways that you should be flirting based on what she did.
Based on what she's
show.
Doing and how to be successful. Mm-hmm. That's incredible. Yeah. I should look at that episode.
Yeah, I think that was
I could use all the help I could get.
I think that was, if I think about like the core of our content and the times we've ventured out from that core, I think that's probably the farthest we've ventured. And we also had a ton of fun and also had a lot of fun conversations.
That and our dating show.
Yes.
For sure.
We had a whole, that was very fun.
Definitely. I love that. That's so fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess to tie it into the whole like conceptions about an Asian American podcast thing, I think when I look at my ancestors, my father, my grandfather, my grandmother, my parents, people who came from North Korea were refugees and then like came to America as immigrants who didn't speak English and like were literally forging their own destiny here. Mm-hmm. Something that defines them, I think, is a severe lack of play. Mm. Just like it feels like only now am I watching my dad reclaim a lost childhood that he never had the opportunity to have because of XYZ, an overbearing, sometimes abusive father, you know, like a harsh environment where success is not just something that you want to attain. If you don't get it, the family dies. Mm-hmm. And so I think some of the privilege that we're afforded as children of immigrants or children's children of immigrants is that they gave us this space to be able to play, to have joy, to have childhood that isn't marred by war or conflict or strife. Mm-hmm. And so I think if I didn't play a little within reason, I think it's like it dishonors what they were trying to do, which was to give me a childhood that my dad never had a chance to have. Mm-hmm. So I think the play is extremely vulnerable and extremely meaningful, which is, you know, part of why I have it kind of as like a life philosophy, why I wanted to talk about it so much. I just want to talk about play. You guys want to talk about games and stuff?
We'll get there.
Yeah.
But I mean, I thank you so much for sharing all of that. And I have had that statement as well in my head when I think about, you know, times I've butted heads with my parents and stuff, and, you know, they believe there's like a correct way to do things. And then I think about how, well, didn't they make all these sacrifices so that I could be happy, so that I could have fun with my life? Mm-hmm. And I've kind of seen that shift in my parents too, where at the time when I was still being a software engineer and I was exploring film, my parents were like, why are you working more? Like, you should go hang out with friends and stuff. And I was like, you literally never let me hang out with friends in high school.
Yes,
like,
dude, I had this exact same thing.
Really?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
I was actually preparing for Chun and I was like doing all this work. And my mom was like, you haven't hung out with your friends in like several weeks. Like, you should go hang out. And I was like, what are you talking about, mom? Like, my life, first of all. But second of all, why? What? Like, when did this change happen?
I feel like our parents are also kind of realizing too that there is a sacred space for play, and
totally.
Like there does need to be time carved out for it as well. I know we're talking about play, but for people who maybe have been so detached from play and don't know what the play is, how do you personally define or break down play?
Let me go ahead and look up the Merriam-Webster's dictionary definition. Play is noun.
Wait, actually, I'm kind of curious.
Oh, really?
What is it actually?
Play, verb, noun?
Yeah.
As a verb, as a noun?
Okay, it says...
I mean, I do have one that...
It says activity engaged in for enjoyment and recreation, especially by children.
Oh, I love that.
It's very interesting.
Very fun. I think that encapsulates a lot of the spirit of it. I think when I think about it, I cannot escape the alliterative devices that I hear for, like, anything. So I came up with a little alliterative device. Take it with a grain of salt. It's the 4 F's, basically. So these 4 F's kind of, for me, they feel like a broad enough definition, but also something that kind of encapsulates what play feels like to me. It's one, it's feeding the wonder. Two is fighting the cynicism. 3 is feeling the present moment, and then forging the space and time to continue playing. Mm-hmm. I think play is basically that. It's a childlike wonder. It's like, it's you having a spirit of wanting to engage in something for whimsy and for fun, not necessarily for seriousness. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a way that we can play in a bunch of areas in life, not just while you're having a game night with friends, which is awesome. Mm. But I also think there's space for that in work and in career and in relationships especially.
I mean, I think they're very actionable too, and they're things that can, like, they're things that can get knocked off at the same time, mm-hmm. With like the same activity. So mm-hmm. like even like forging the space and time to continue playing and then feeling the present moment, I can see that kind of being encapsulated together. But yeah. by distinguishing them, it reminds you to be present and to also schedule time,
yeah,
to just make space for it.
Yeah, totally.
Which is so important, and it's something that is so such like a minuscule task, but it's something that we just can easily forget about to do, mm-hmm. and as a result, forget to play.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I also really like these four because when I think of play, I have a lot of, I guess, more negative associations with play, like, oh, it's only for kids, or like, oh, it's really like juvenile. But when I think about the four like tenets that you mentioned, like feeding the wonder, mm-hmm. fighting the cynicism, it kind of reminds me, like, isn't it really important for anyone of any age to feel a sense of wonder? Like, isn't it important for anyone of any age to fight cynicism? Like, cynicism is a really awful feeling. Like, don't I want to push back on that sometimes? So I really like it.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Yeah. I'm curious, have you ever felt like that negative connotation of play?
Yeah, I think that we discourage play because it's essentially anti-capitalist. It's mm-hmm. anti-productivity. It's anti, like, you are a machine inside this greater machine mm-hmm. that operates specifically for efficiency and for maximum revenue, right? Mm-hmm. But I think in, like, recent years, we've kind of found that people need to live very full, meaningful, joyful lives to mm-hmm. be productive. Mm-hmm. I think it runs counter to our culture, but it also, like, doesn't make sense to minimize joy or play at the expense of people mm-hmm. in the long term. I think we've kind of found that. I think that's all the films made in, like, between the 1990s and 2000s, things like Fight Club, right? They're, like, tapping into this social milieu of just like negative energy surrounding meaningless day-to-day jobs and lives that are devoid of joy and play. It's like, maybe play is really necessary for for a healthy life. At least that's what I began thinking. And when I say play, that's why I say these like four F's: feeding the wonder, fighting the cynicism, feeling the present moment, and forging the space and time to continue playing. I say them just because it feels more like a spirit or like a philosophy mm-hmm. of like how to kind of feed and maintain joy. Because mm-hmm. it's really easy to, in a lot of circumstances in life, kind of lose those things. Mm-hmm. When I think they're really valuable and they're healthy for us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Given these four tenets, these four Fs that you've kind of talked about.
That sounds so official.
I don't know. I feel like it's kind of fun to be official. It's like, you know, a little kid who's on like a suit and tie mm-hmm. to like give a little lecture.
Sure.
if we talk about actions that we can take, how do you feel like play can be incorporated into different aspects of our lives? Because like you've said, I think play we think of as like child's play, like mm-hmm. recess. I'm sure that play can be incorporated in other ways. We just haven't normalized that conversation or that language. So yeah. I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Sure. Do you mind if I answer a question with a question?
Yeah.
How do you guys like tend to forge spaces for play now? Or how do you not?
When I think about the definitions of play and things that make me feel wonder and really be present in the moment, I love shopping. I love trying on new clothes. I think it's so fun to just like see something and imagine how it's going to look on me and then have all these different combinations of like colors and materials and styles. I think it's really fun.
Yeah.
Something else that I love doing to play is improvising piano, especially if I'm with like friends who play other instruments. And the last thing is I love lateral thinking riddles.
Do you see this face?
What?
His face is like one. He's like shocked.
Oh. No, that's awesome. Music jams are so cool.
Yeah.
I love music
jams.
Do you
play or sing some?
I play guitar and I sing. But I lost piano a long time ago. Yeah, I really loved it, but you know, mm-hmm. act of rebellion against my Asian parents.
Oh,
but the piano's amazing. I think that's so fun that you can improv piano. I find that so cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, continue.
Also, piano is fun because it can be like a solo thing or also something to like support someone else. Like I recently was hanging out with my coworkers and his daughter, who's like 10, really likes to sing. And she like wanted to sing all these songs, but didn't want to do it alone. So I was like, oh, I'll like play piano for you while you sing to like encourage a little bit.
Mm.
Aww. That's so wholesome.
Thank you. The last thing is I love lateral thinking riddles. Have you all heard of these?
No.
No.
So here's an example. A man walks into a restaurant, orders pelican soup, drinks it, leaves the restaurant, and then ends his life. What happened? So it's a very bizarre situation. So you have to ask a bunch of questions. Yeah. Like, you have to ask a bunch of yes or no questions to nail down what the reasoning is. Or it's like another example could be like, you know, it's like really, you've never heard of these before? Let me try to find another.
I've never heard of these. This sounds like, fun. This sounds extremely fun.
These are so fun.
What the heck? Wait, okay. We should be doing these at the beginning of our podcast.
So he orders pelican soup.
Yeah.
First of all, didn't even know that was a menu item. This is a very avant-garde restaurant. Yes. Does he order the pelican soup because he's really dehydrated? I don't know.
Maybe.
Okay.
Wait, so are we actually doing this riddle right now?
Boy, are we.
We could.
Okay, we're doing this riddle.
It's kind of a very morbid one, so maybe we don't
need
to.
I'm so invested in this pelican soup.
Well, now we have to know. Okay. Okay, what are the
Why is it made of pelicans? Which part?
Yeah, well, we can only ask yes or no.
Yeah, only yes or no.
Okay, sorry, hold on.
Is it a normal thing he orders?
No, that's a great question.
Okay.
Is this his first time going into this restaurant?
It doesn't really matter, but it's his first... It doesn't really matter. Oh my goodness.
Was it immediately after he left the restaurant that he killed himself?
Yes.
Oh,
Pound, you're so good.
Was there something weird in the pelican soup?
No. Okay. The answer is really morbid. I feel really bad for bringing this story up because the answer is really morbid. It was just like the first example that I thought
of. What's the answer?
Okay, yeah. Well, let's speed it up. Yeah, let's get to the end. She forgot to bring it up.
You really? I really latched onto the pelican soup.
It's okay. Should I say something so morbid on the podcast?
Yes, do it.
Yeah.
Well, you put in a lot of disclaimers already.
Okay. So.
she can't even say
it. Wow, it must be really bad. It's really bad.
Just for context, she can't even watch things like Harry Potter.
Wait.
Yeah, she's like very
squeamish.
To violence and stuff?
Anything
okay.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So this man.
God, how was this pelican murder?
Was like. This man had been shipwrecked with another man who produced meat that he said was from a pelican found on the island. And then when he later went to a restaurant and tasted the actual pelican soup, he's like, this doesn't taste like the supposed pelican soup that I had earlier. So what had probably happened was the first pelican soup, quote unquote, that he was offered and he ate was probably not pelican, maybe a person, maybe another...
Wait, so why did he kill himself?
Because he was just so distressed from... Yeah.
Oh my god. This is the plot of Margaret Atwood
book. Is like a Greek myth.
This is.
Like the Greek, like in Greek myths, it's like the king like wants to get back
You mean like Odysseus or something like that?
Yeah, I forget which one this one was, but it was like, he wanted to get back at the gods, so he fed like his kids
to
the gods.
Oh, yes. That one.
Yeah.
Oh god, what's his name?
I'm shaking. I can't believe I said something so gross.
Tantalus.
Tantalus
is a terrible person. Yeah.
Terrible. I mean, amazing puzzle.
Yes.
That was so fun.
I really like these types of puzzles.
They're pretty morbid.
They're pretty morbid. It's like you start with just like a really bizarre scenario and you ask yes or no to try to figure out what happened.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
Anyways.
Wow. Remind me never to order pelican soup.
Exactly. You never know.
What was the question again that we asked?
I was asking about play, about how do you guys play? Because you asked me about how incorporating play into our adult lives
thank
looks
you,
like.
Thank you, podcast host, for getting us back on track.
I'm the guest, man.
No, this is, okay. Thank you, Sophia.
Yeah, welcome to Bamboo and Glass. I'm Daniel. This is Sophia. I'm so excited to be here. Anyways, play?
Play? Okay. When I'm at home with my parents... I like to scare my dad. So we have when we lived in a house in the Bay Area, it used to be like you hear the garage door open, my dad's car comes in, and there's another door, right, to get inside. I would hide like by the door. So when my dad walks through, I just scare him.
Gosh.
And then he always like, he'll always gasp or scream. It was the funniest thing ever. And so my dad started like, you know, one-upping me, like being on the lookout and stuff. And so I had to be creative with figuring out where to hide. So I would hide like in the bathroom. I would hide at a different wall and all that stuff. And so in Korea, we live in an apartment now. And so... Still same principle. I wait for the elevator to open for my dad to come out. But this one requires a little bit more guessing because you don't know who's in this elevator. You don't know if the people if the person coming out of the elevator is actually going to be my dad.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of fun and danger involved with that one.
All right.
Man, the poor, like, yeah, but I also Korean feel like, businesswoman who's coming home from a long day
I also feel
work.
Like I should stop doing it because my dad's getting older and I'm worried I'm going to give him a heart attack.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you got to find out, find another way to be mischievous. That's fun, though.
Yeah, no, but my mom, like, has a lot of fun. She gets in on it. Like, if I'm hiding inside the apartment, my dad would be like, oh, where's Tan? And she's like, I don't know, she's in her room. And I'm, like, clearly not in the room. So my mom likes to get in on it, too.
That's sweet.
Yeah. So that's, like, one way I like to have play with my parents.
I love that.
With my parents, too, I love telling Konglish jokes. I told you a couple of them on set. Yeah. I have a lot of fun with those, like, language stuff. I'd play Wordle with my partner. Mm-hmm. We get very competitive about it. We're still playing it. I know it's kind of dead, but we still play it. And I think game nights are a more recent thing for me because I'm an only child, and so I never really had other people to play games with. And so my partner, he has a big family. He has four siblings, and so he does game nights all the time. So now I've been introduced to, like, Settlers of Catan, Villainous, Heads Up, Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza, all really fun games.
I love that. Mm-hmm. I love game nights.
Yeah, game nights are a really great way to, like, gather friends and stuff, and I have a lot of fun with that. Alone, though, I just like reading, like, YA fantasy romantic comedy type of novels. Like, it's just easy. Like, I can turn off my brain and just enjoy the ride and be at the edge of my seat the whole time. And then if I'm, like, really having a hard time getting out of bed on some days, I, you know, like, those early 2000s movies with kids and, like, there's, like, some music jamming out in the background with the opening title sequence and you just see them getting ready. I'll just play, like, some type of music of, like, how I want to feel, and I, like, dance around as I get ready and stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah, pretend like I'm a 2000s, like, Disney Channel star.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. Yes, yeah, some Lizzie McGuire up in there.
Yeah, oh, you know? No, classic.
Some Hannah Montana.
I make sure I fall in the bathtub like she does.
I got it. I understand.
Yeah. All right, your turn.
Okay, yeah, so you guys actually touched on stuff that I wanted to talk about. Kind of why I asked the question is because I think there's ways that we incorporate play in ways that people don't normally think about play, which you totally nailed on the head. Things like listening to music or reading books or scaring our dads or doing lateral thinking puzzles with morbid conclusions.
Exactly.
I think that the way that I kind of divide it is there's play in and of itself. So, like, games, game nights, things that I do for me. And then I have, like, things that I do for career, because I'm an actor, I'm a creative, and playing is quite literally my job description. And then things that you do in relationships and kind of the benefits that come with that. So for just, like, games for me, I kind of feel like I really want to get lost in something when I'm playing. I want to kind of...
like, lose track of time.
That's right. Or, like, have kind of a little bit of an escapism, a little bit of, like, transport me to another world. So I do love reading books. So, like, I've been reading Fahrenheit 451 recently, and I love that book. Name of the Wind is, like, my favorite book of all time for fantasy. Recently read, like, Bear and the Nightingale. Those are great. Great things to just get lost in and enjoy. But I also love Dungeons and Dragons. I'm a big old nerd, and so I love like, there's been a huge wave recently of people joining Dungeons and Dragons, and I actually have, like, a 2.5 year long campaign that's been going with me and some actor friends
of mine.
Wait,
do you want to explain what a campaign is?
Oh, yeah.
For people who
don't
know Dungeons & Dragons?
Yeah, of course. So people who don't know, Dungeons & Dragons is basically, it's a tabletop role-playing game where you kind of take the reins of a classic fantasy hero of various different kinds, and you basically go out on a grand story and adventure and improv as you go on. And hopefully win the battle, save the day, sometimes die. It's basically telling a whole bunch of stories with your friends, playing like you did when you were in kindergarten. And so that's what I love about it, is because for me when I was younger, the things that I would do all the time was tell stories with my friends. We would, like, embody, like, the characters that we just saw on TV. Like, I remember I really liked the Powerpuff Girls when I was a kid. And so I'm like, oh, I'm Bubblegum. And you're Mojo Jojo. I'm going to kick your butt, you know? Or, like, you know, I really liked Lego Bionicles back then, too. So I'd do a lot of that hero stuff. And so, like, I'd pick one of my friends and be like, you're the villain. And we're the heroes. And we're going to come get you. And we did all that stuff. And so now in my adult life, I've decided to do the exact same thing and not change at all and decide to just do that a little bit more seriously. So now we have, like, D&D and, like, minis that we're setting out, and we're thinking about like, oh, this guy, like I hit him with my axe and all this stuff. But we end up creating really meaningful stories while we're doing it as well. It's a really fun.
So you have
fun...
a story that's 2.5 years long right now.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. That's actually, we're about to end it soon. Yeah. We turned it into like a podcast and a stream midway through quarantine.
What?
But now we've kind of faded it out. Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. It was really fun. So yeah, Dungeons and Dragons. I do it all the time. I play video games in my spare time too. I do love them. I think I need to have a healthy relationship with them, but I do like video games a lot. Mm. So that's kind of all stuff I do for my personal enjoyment. Mm. Then there's my career stuff. Mm. I feel like being able to play in a career, especially a career that you're drawn to, is really important. A lot of those things of play, like entering spaces of like wonder and vulnerability and considering like what could inspire me, is really helpful for me. Mm. For creating characters or embodying like... the characters that I'm doing in a play or a film, I will often do exercises similar to how I do play or how I do like Dungeons and Dragons, where I'll like journal out things that my character would think about. Mm. or ways that my character would like act in these situations. Mm. Or even like if my character was in this modern era, like what songs they would listen to. Mm. I think there's ways that creating that same openness that I would have in play really helps create depth when I approach acting roles. But also outside of the screen or outside of the stage, I think there's other ways that play can be really helpful. For example, like joking around with coworkers on like literally the most basic level, mm. it makes things a lot more fun in general. Like we were on set on Char, and there are times on set when things will get very like harrowing and hard, and stress will be running pretty high as you meet the deadline of the day or whatever. And honestly, doing little things like playing pranks, little small things, like that can really help lighten the mood and increase joy for everyone. Like Jared was having a rough day, mm. one of the days. And so June, our director, and Jared, our first AD, I took a little packet of hand sanitizer that June gave me. It was super weird. And I decided I would figure out how to sneak it into as many back pockets as possible. So I started like reverse pickpocketing people with this hand sanitizer with only Jared as my audience. And Jared, who'd been having like a really rough day, mm. he started like laughing a lot, and we got to joke about it for the rest of the day. So I think it kind of turned around for him. Mm. So yeah, I think play is like really important in career. And the last thing I think is for relationships. Mm. Quite a lot of studies that kind of correlate play in relationships, mm. and couples that specifically like play together, that actually like increase general like relationship satisfaction, sometimes marital mm. satisfaction, if that's like the context of the relationship. I think it's pretty simple. It's like you associate dopamine and like happiness, and then you do that with your partner. So you associate happiness with your partner in spaces of play, as long as it's cooperative and there's good communication and stuff.
Daniel, you're such a fun guy. Can I ask you a quick
question? yeah.
What's so you're single, right?
Yes, I'm very single.
what is your idea of like play on like a first date?
Oh God. On a first date? Oh man, I think
just because like you know like nerves are really high on a first really date. High. Like also you can go like the basic route of like you know dinner, but I feel like you're totally. I feel like you wouldn't just do dinner.
Really?
I feel like even if it is just funny. Dinner, I think you would incorporate something.
Oh, that's pretty funny. For me, I'm actually because I think play is a really vulnerable thing. Like to kind of expose someone to like kind of the playful part of yourself is something that you really need to feel safe with that Ooh. Person with. So I don't know if I'm like a first maybe if you're friends, right? You're like friends and had like a previous like kind of like rapport. Like let's do game night with like a couples and like and we'll see how it goes, right? Mm. That could be fun. Things can also go pretty south pretty quick if like they're really competitive and not very good at communicating, you know? But I think in terms of embracing a spirit of play, I think coming open with that openness and that wonder and that like trying to abandon or let go of that cynicism is really helpful for a first date, you know? Like we all come with our baggage and like previous relationships, right? As we enter into spaces. And sometimes it's hard to not think about that. But if we're entering into a space like present, just kind of experiencing like literally like how does the day look? Like what does the wind smell like? What do I like about their hair or their eyes? Or like, oh, I like the tone of their voice. Or keeping yourself open to this person who's lived their whole other set of experiences and plays in all these ways. I think that kind of embracing that spirit of joy and playfulness and openness can kind of take the stress and the nervousness down. You're like, I just want to enjoy this person, experience this person. And whatever hits me, hits me. Mm. Now, all that said, I'm single, so please don't listen to a single word I said. I know nothing.
Hey, you know the demographic of our listeners is majority women.
Yeah, I would give my number, but that's probably not appropriate. But yeah, that's a little couple thoughts I have. Yeah,
I was thinking about what you were saying about playing in your career and thinking about if I could bring play and joy into my career, because I think that's like an area of life where I do not feel very playful or lighthearted or happy. So I work as a product manager in tech, and so one of my responsibilities is, let's just say I was a product manager on Instagram, right? I think we all use Instagram. I would be thinking about, pick a person, like whether it's someone who's a really established creator who's feeling a little bit insecure about younger people being on TikTok, or maybe it's someone who like has a topic that they're really passionate about, but they don't just can't work up the guts to create something on Instagram. And my job is to think about, like, from this person's perspective, what is something I can, like a feature I can build to improve their life. What you said about acting and inhabiting these different characters is actually really relevant to me.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you for making me feel meaningful with that, with that one. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, there's at Stanford, there's something called the D School, the design school. And so they teach this philosophy called design thinking. And I think it incorporates a lot of play inherently into their philosophy. Like, they do a lot of brainstorming sessions where, like, you write a ton of ideas on post-its and you, like, rearrange them and you're, like, very hands-on and tactile with it, which kind of reminds you of, like, child's play in a way. And they also always say, like, quantity over quality. There's no such thing as a bad idea. Like, all these things that kids would not really be hindered by when they're initially creating or just operating in the world. And so, yeah, I've always really gravitated towards that style of thinking because I was like, I feel like that just releases a lot of expectations from myself and allows me to be more playful and be more adventurous in my thinking.
Totally. I think, yeah, and I think in terms of, like, approaching it from, like, a work, especially a creative's point of view, whether you're an actor or an artist or like a product designer or a manager or anything like that, I think embracing a like kind of openness for play creates, like, a space where any and all ideas can come out. And often the best ideas are the ones that are 3, 4, 5 ideas in. They're never, like, the first one. But you need to really get into a space where you're allowing yourself to risk sounding dumb or weird or kind of strange and absurd. But the more you kind of embrace that, sometimes the best ideas can come from that, which is awesome. I love that.
We've talked about some of the things that we enjoy doing in our life for play. I want to kind of get to know for each one of you, is there something that is traditionally seen as play that you haven't been able to incorporate in your life, but you're kind of inspired to think about how you might incorporate that?
Oh, yeah. I used to play sports all the time. I don't do it very much now because I don't think there's I don't have a big community that's like very, that likes to play sports, like either like play football or pick up soccer or something like that. Because I'm surrounded by actors, and a lot of actors don't like playing sports. I feel like, I mean, well, okay, that's a generalization. There's plenty of actors who like sports.
But just, like, the people you're around, you haven't quite found, like, a sports community.
Yeah, like, the people who want to play, like, a pickup game of, like, basketball, for example, right? I would love to do that, and I haven't, like, I used to have a group. We used to meet in the summer, and we'd play, like, Ultimate Frisbee, like, after college and stuff, and that was so fun. Or, like, my brother plays spikeball, so sometimes he and I play spikeball, but I haven't found, like, a lot of, like, a larger community of people who just kind of want to play pickup games of something casually, so I would love that. Yeah, I kind of miss it.
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, it's video games, which is funny, because that's something that you really like doing. I'm just so bad. I'm so bad at video games, and as a result, I kind of get in my head about it. Like, I start to kind of give myself a hard time that I can't even do, like, basic mechanisms in video games that I've seen other people do. Right. And it's like, if I'm playing against a 12-year-old, I just don't feel good about myself because they're just beating me up in the game. And so that is definitely just a block that I've had when it comes to a couple of different traditional forms of play, the main one being video games. And so that's why I like things like Wordle, where it's kind of like, we all know 5-letter words out there. Like, we should be able to guess it within 6 tries. Yeah. And a lot of times it's funny because, like, I'll get the answer, but it's a word that I've never heard in my life before. And I'm like, that can't be a word. And you go and look it up. And so I think that has, like, a healthy balance for me of feeling like, oh, there are things that aren't within my knowledge. Like, there are some of those words that I don't know. But at least, like, the journey to getting there has been really fun versus for video games. It's like I'm just kind of get dropped into, really intense games and I don't even know where to begin.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. Like, I think if you're going to go play sports for the first time, you wouldn't like join the NFL and then get like tackled by like, the defensive lineman from the freaking, Patriots. You want to do that.
Yeah.
I think like maybe for a couple like beginner video games that are like fun and also really accessible. Have you heard of Animal Crossing?
I have.
Yeah.
I don't have
a
Switch, though.
I see. Yeah. I see.
So, sometimes it's, even the investment in, the hardware kind of becomes a block for me. Mm. And so, yeah.
Or another recommendation is, something like Stardew Valley. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. But there... So, I think... Often people associate, associate games with like kind of the PvP, like a high intensity, like screaming in your mom's basement kind of a thing. But I think there's a lot of video games for like a really broad variety of players. So like Stardew Valley and Animal Crossing are kind of like life sims where you meet like cute villagers and like you get to talk to them and form relationships. Mm. And for Stardew Valley, you get to start a little farm and like cultivate your own crops and stuff. Mm. And so there's no like losing condition where like in some video games like that are harder, a battle thing like Super Smash Bros. Or like Tekken, right? But instead, you have something that's like extremely open and instead allows you to kind of express yourself in like this small little tiny bit of digital world. Mm-hmm. So if you're like intimidated by video games, I think like maybe something like those two, which are like only about like just kind of sensing some wonder and experiencing some nice, like, fun little digital spaces might be a good way place to start.
Yeah, I think it just kind of shows how there's always a lot of different options that you can explore in an area where you may feel like it's inaccessible, but also, like, you don't need to force yourself to make it accessible for you if there are other forms of play that you're more used to. Yeah. I wonder if you have any thoughts of maybe encouraging play just on your own, too.
Yeah. Sophia, do you want to start?
You can go first.
Oh, okay.
You're our play expert.
I don't know. Expert's a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit self-aggrandizing. I think one thing is to kind of just make the jump. I'll tell a little story here, but I was doing my this play. This is actually how my D&D game started. I was doing a play, Shakespeare, and I played D&D a little bit before that, and I'd been really hungering to play because I missed it a lot. I was just like, I really want this, but I just haven't found the space for it or the people to do it with. And I kept having these ideas of like what would the ideal group of people would be and like friends that I already knew that I wanted to text and have that space with. And it just wasn't working out, but I still really just wanted to play. And so at the risk of being rejected and being a little bit sounding dumb, I went up to literally anyone in the cast of my show. And I went, hey, have you ever played D&D? I've never been the dungeon master before. I've never ran a game, but I really miss it and I want to play it. Would you be interested in joining me? And I had a couple people that I had already started to form some relationships with be like, yeah, that sounds really fun. And those people became some of my closest friends throughout the quarantine because I just decided to take the risk on some good people that I knew that I wasn't like super close with, but we ended up gaming together. And that just became like its own little group of friends of mine. And now, they are in New York and Chicago and in Northern California and in like Atlanta. And we all still like... we Zoom in or Discord in, call, and we still play together.
It's
pretty
cool. You're really good at reading people's vibes. Like, the fact that you, read their vibe, went up to them, they said yes, and you're still friends. It's so cool.
Well, funnily enough, I went to a lot of people who didn't have, a good vibe. Oh. And I kind of vetted them, and I was like, I don't know if we gel. And then, naturally, those people kind of fade out. But the people who, you still like hanging out with and who end up being good for the group, you continue to foster those relationships and those things lasted, which is awesome. I'd say just take the risk. Like if you're, if you have some coworkers that you think are cool, just take a risk for people who you already kind of like, maybe you don't know very well.
Yeah. I think people are just waiting for someone else to organize it. I think people are probably really down or much more down than you think.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. Also aligns with the commentary you made about play being very vulnerable. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it was vulnerable to some extent to go up to people in your cast because you don't know because there's that separation of work and life and you don't know if they are interested in being involved in a life sense versus just work. And so... I'm very proud of you for going in and, talking to everyone and asking them if they want to hang out. I mean, you did the same thing for Chul. You were like, let's go get Korean barbecue and karaoke. And so that ended up happening. And I'm sure that so many people had so much fun on that, too.
Yeah, it was really nice.
Yeah. Earlier when you were talking about video games, you offhandedly mentioned that you need a healthier relationship with video games.
Yes.
And so I want to talk about healthy boundaries with play. Is there a possibility of taking play too far?
Wow. That was a phenomenal transition.
Thank you.
I'm in awe right now. That was so smooth. Yes. Healthy boundaries for play. I had a moment during the quarantine where I was actually like gaming pretty much every single day. And it didn't feel particularly restful for me or particularly enjoyable. And it didn't really open me up to wonder or like fight my cynicism. So it kind of like really went against all the things that kind of define play. I just ended up doing something to kind of numb my like anxieties and then run away from my responsibilities. And I don't think that's a healthy space for play at all. And not really for true play. That kind of frees you and makes you vulnerable and it makes you enjoy life more.
Yeah.
And so I actually just took that gaming laptop that I had and I just put it away. I just put it in like my closet. And then instead I like started reading a book and then I started like trying to like organize some digital spaces to like to hang out with my friends and see people. And then it started getting really healthy to do that. And then I found some specific games to do in the social context, not just by myself. And once I'd done that and kind of defined good boundaries for it, like, oh, I should game with people and not just by myself.
I mean, I think about like doom scrolling is something that's talked about totally. In social media. And I bring that up because I feel like TikTok is like a place where you can just scroll for hours and hours and hours and just this automatic action that you do and you don't even realize that it's not even something that you're being fully present with. Maybe it's something that you're just doing to distract yourself from other things that are going on in your life or just to pass the time. And that's not a very conscious, present way to be with play and to relish the things that you get to see on the screen. And I do that with like shows and films all the time too. Like I just kind of watch as a distraction from other things. I'm like, I don't want to address this thing, and so I'm just going to go and do that instead, rather than going in with the intention of like really fueling like my inner child or fueling that sense of joy and adventure. So that's a really good point.
Yeah. How about yourself? Do you have any like boundaries for play that you kind of consider, or even like maybe not just in like gaming but like relationships? Or
I think for me it's like online shopping. There's like a creative and fun element to it, but for me it's like if I see something that I like, I can add it to the cart, whatever, it's like me bookmarking the item, but I'll always wait 3 days before I commit to buying something, and if I'm still excited about it after 3 days, then I buy it. And most oftentimes I'm not, which means this practice has like saved me a lot of money.
That's great. I actually do the same thing for me with like larger objects of value. So like a game that I really want, I'll give myself a six month line.
What?
Where I'll go like, if I want it after 6 months, then I still really want it. And that means I should buy it. With media, like there's the whole like life cycle of the media that happens. And I think it lasts about 6 months really. Like people will be like doing a game, covering a game on YouTube, on Twitch, on a bunch of sites, reviewing the game, right? And so this kind of hype cycle stays for a number of weeks. So it's not enough for me to wait like 3 days.
Yeah.
So I made it 6 months. And so once I was like, oh, I still really want this thing. And I think it would add value to me. It would be like something joyful. I bought my like Switch that way. And I don't regret it because I waited for 6 months and I was very happy that I waited for 6 months.
That is really impressive. Sure. Self-control. Oh my gosh. Six months.
You have data to back it up. So that's really great to help justify everything.
Thank you.
I think play for me also kind of comes in the form of meeting up with people. You know, those conversations that kind of get away from you and you lose track of time. Like, I love that.
Yeah.
But there was a time where I only had weekends because I was working a full-time job. And so I was trying to meet with people as often as I could. And that ended up being me, like, running to the subway to get there on time. And it was really restless as a result.
Yeah.
And I think something about the pandemic, too, has helped slow down a lot of aspects of my life. And so now, really, I try to only schedule at most one hangout a day, and if I do it one day, then I take like a day break as well to kind of rejuvenate and to make sure I'm just as present for the next one that I have. And that's been really nice because I haven't needed to like continually check my time to make sure I need to go somewhere. I have allotted enough time, like 3-4 hours even, to make sure that I have time to be present with this person and to just see where the conversation goes. And it's like no hard feelings if like they need to go do their thing or like if they have other obligations. But at least for me, it's nice that I don't need to keep checking in and kind of get pulled back into real life as a result.
Totally. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah. So I think like maybe for, I guess, our viewers who are listening or our hearers who are listening.
Listeners.
For our listeners. That's a great word for it. Maybe I should have used that one first. For our listeners, and pretend I didn't say anything before this. I think, I guess, considering like what are the things that make you feel restful in play is like really good. Maybe check in with like some of the things that you do for leisure and be like, is this kind of leaving me numb and unsatisfied after I do it? Or is this something intentional and I do find like joy in it? And maybe it's not a black and white answer. It's like maybe this thing is a good thing, but you just need less of it or more of it. Mm-hmm. And there's like spaces to negotiate that intentionality with play. And I think that's really the important thing.
Yeah, I think kind of also just observing your energy levels. Totally. And there's different types of energy levels, I think. There's like the physical exhaustion of doing something. And just because you're physically tired from an activity doesn't mean it wasn't satisfying emotionally, mentally, spiritually. Mm-hmm. And so I try to be mindful of that. Like from those hangouts sometimes, I'll notice when I come home, my mouth is really tired from just talking so much. And so I'm like, okay, I do want to have play again, but it maybe should be something that doesn't require me to talk so much. I think about that too. Do you have other suggestions of where to start with play for people who, you know, maybe they've kind of like forgotten what play is like? Like it's not something that they take initiative to do. They don't initiate organizing game nights or anything, but they want to find an accessible way to ease into play in their day-to-day lives.
Yeah, so Tiffany True did a really cool like little visualization exercise when you guys were doing episode 119. And so I think here, I'd say for our listeners, check in with yourselves and kind of imagine like that younger version of yourself. What did you do for play? What was the things that made you the most joyful as a child? Was it like playing pretend? Was it putting on a show? There are aspects of that, like probably not just Disneyland or just shopping, but there's a core to that where you are playing. Maybe it's seeing people and talking with people. There's some core there that really is restful for you and for your inner child. And I think there's a lot of different media or different things that you can engage with in play now that might match up with that kind of core of play.
I know we kind of talked about a couple of quotes that you had, but I wanted to end the episode with one last quote that you shared.
Okay, I get to do the honors of reading it. Okay, awesome. It's really about present joy. Where do you find that? With yourself, with a partner, with friends. Investing into your present joy might not change the circumstances in your life, but play shapes your ability to cope with things in your life. Where life is inconstant, you can have play, joy, and community as a constant reminder that joy is never too far away to grasp right now. Well, thank you so much for joining us for this conversation. It was so refreshing just to talk about something so light but important. So thank you for joining us. And I'm excited to see Chol. Obviously, YouTube brought such good vibes to the set. So I'm excited to see what you all created. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in. We hope this inspired some ideas for play and inspired you to reach out to the people who can help you enjoy play. We share new episodes every Sunday, so you can look forward to our next episode next Sunday. And if you want to keep in touch with us and kind of see highlights from this episode, you can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Bamboo and Glass. And if you enjoyed this episode and want to make it easier for others to find our podcast, you can consider rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, or treating us to a coffee or a boba or something fun we can enjoy through our Buy Me a Coffee, which is all linked in our episode description below. And thank you again, Daniel, for joining us. And with that, we will see you all next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.